When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, my week in cars with Matt Pryor over here. Stephen Cropley over there. Morning, Steve.
How are you going, mate?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for coming over bright and early on this sunny Thursday morning.
Yeah, beautiful, crisp day.
Nice drive across, I would imagine.
It was. Not too much traffic and nice roads and...
Yeah.
Terrific, yeah.
Well, we have a letter, Steve. Autocar@haymarket.com, you can write to us. Neil Harrison has just bought a car that would be quite nice for this sort of drive, I think. He said, Neil says, at this time last year, I made inquiries about buying a replacement Volkswagen Golf R, but was given a 60-plus week lead time, suggesting September this year. The Mark 8 revisions had also been signposted for this time period, so I had no idea what I would actually get if I committed. I decided to keep an eye on the nearly new stock to see if I could get something close to my desired spec. Eventually, I spotted a suitable option. White, not blue, performance and winter packs, but no spare wheel. This is what I bought, but it was registered end of September 2023, had 10 miles on the clock, and before I got it, it had sat in a dealership for 6 months, creating the urgent need for a sale. This gave me a significant saving on list price.
Does he say any...
He doesn't say exactly how much, but I'll take a significant saving as an amount. However, I'm mystified how a car with supposed supply issues can be ordered into dealer stock without a known buyer, pre-registered, and ultimately sold at a big discount in preference to selling to a confirmed buyer at list price. How do Volkswagen make any money?
it's a mystery, isn't it?
I would say, Neil, don't worry about it, but
he's got a good car, hasn't
he? Yeah.
I think I just so believe in buying from stock. Mm. I don't think I've ever in my whole life ordered a car and waited for it.
Oh, really?
I just see what's in stock, especially now. You know, on Auto Trader, if you just put in that you're only interested in new cars. Taycan, remember we did it the other day. It used to be a matter of ordering them for months, but I mean, there's sort of 60 or 80 in the country that are just awaiting. I presume the pipeline just can't be cut off when things go a bit wrong with the market.
Yeah.
The pipeline has, you know, the old sausage machine keeps on producing cars.
Yeah, they've got to still make them, haven't they?
But it is still a mystery, isn't it? And maybe people just didn't want a white one, you know, in the case of his his Golf. But it sounds like a cracking car. The only thing that I'd worry about is that I would like a spare wheel.
I would like a spare wheel. I mean, presumably before long, but maybe by now, Neil has bought one and popped it in the boot.
Yeah.
Spare wheel. This is unrelated to the rest of this column, mate. Somebody put the key down the side of my daughter's Audi A3 and threw a screwdriver through both near side tyres at the weekend.
Why?
In a car park. Oh, it's just so infuriating, isn't it? So infuriating. She called me up. She was like, somebody's put the key down side of my car, and I could just and she went, hang on a minute, there's something wrong with my tyres. Both of them completely kaput. So even though she has one spare wheel, doesn't get you very far. Anyway, so she managed to, it got it as far as home. But having the spare wheel meant that I could take both tyres, both flat tyres off, leave a jack under one edge, the space saver on the other, and get both tyres fixed. And then when I came back to have to do some swappery for getting the correct make tyres on the correct axles, the car didn't roll away or fall off or anything, because actually the space saver is really useful for doing, for supporting the car on one corner.
Yeah.
And actually, had there been no spare, I couldn't have done it, because it's where she parks is on a very slight incline, and I wouldn't have trusted it not to fall off a axle stand or a jack or whatever.
That must have been hours of messing about.
It was about, it's hours of messing about, because you have to go and take both tyres off, then take them to my mates at the tyre warehouse and then come back. But it's just, you report it to the police, they come back a day later and go, "We've closed the case." Here's a number. And if you're, here's who you can contact if you're traumatised by it. There's no CCTV at the supermarket, and the next car wash next door, like, actually, it doesn't quite see it. Anyway, she put it on a local sort of social media group going, "Have I been victimised?" And somebody else said, "No, I was parked in that car park. Somebody's kicked in the doors of my car, same day." So it's just, I said to the bloke at the tyre warehouse, "Does this happen a lot?" He said, "Not a lot, but now and again, people come in." He said, "It's always just kids being
stupid."
It's just infuriating, mate.
Infuriating. How would you like to know that you produced a sprog like that?
No, that would be miserable, wouldn't it? Anywho, I digress. But a spare wheel.
But anyway,
save my bacon. And Neil, I think you've got a cracking car.
Yeah, Neil, and also that's right. He's done a wonderful deal.
Yeah,
like to know what money he saved. But
if you we wouldn't necessarily publish it, but we'd be interested to know. We're happy to tell the world if you're happy to. But the next half an hour or so, Steve and I are going to be talking our respective Autocar columns, plus much more besides. Yours starts last weekend, Steve, at the Goodwood Members Meeting.
Yeah, I loved it. It's just fantastic. It's just a kind of blizzard of things to take your eye. I think I'm so glad the season's begun, aren't you? Because we've got, as we talk, the scramble at Bicester Heritage is a couple of days away. It's just all beginning, and I always feel good about that, especially when the weather's like this. Your garden looks fantastic, mate.
Well, you're very kind, mate. It looks... I think the word you're looking for, mate, is unmown.
Well, no.
It's verdant. I'll give it that. But
think of all the bugs that are feeling good about that.
Well, that's what I tell myself as I look at a lawn that is approaching a foot deep in places. It's just been quite a busy few weeks, mate, but I will get round to it. At some point.
No, I'm not knocking you, honestly.
Well, you're very generous to say so. But yes, the bugs would do it. Spring has sprung a bit. It's still blisteringly cold yesterday at times. But the members' meeting does.
It was chilly.
Because it can snow sometimes, can't it? But it feels like it does feel like with this and the April Bicester Scramble, things are
starting to go,
off.
Yeah, the members meeting was terrific. There were lots of highlights, but I particularly enjoyed the Murray T50 demonstrations because that car revving to 12,000 RPM with Dario Franchitti at the wheel is a hell of a thing.
But so this is the T50 is the most.
That's
expensive
the fan
of
car.
The two
upcoming
Murray.
That's the one that sucks itself onto the road.
And this, the one that was on display as a Lauda,
Niki Lauda
track only special edition.
Yeah, right? So it's got extra aero and extra poke and extra noise, and it's good. It's really good, and of course it was well demonstrated by Dario.
Yeah,
but the other thing I got a bit obsessed with was the. There was a race of these little cigar-shaped Formula 3 cars from the very early 60s, and lots of them featuring the 1-litre Ford 105E Anglia engine.
Hmm.
And it just suddenly, I just started thinking about that being the beginning of the Fast Forward era, because, suddenly there's this little lightweight overhead valve, short stroke engine that revved to whatever you wanted to rev it to, and it went in the back of all these lovely little Coopers and Lotuses, and that, but that engine led to the, or you know, was the reason Cosworth came into life, and
right.
And you know, other businesses like Hull Bay, and suddenly that the engine was 1340 cc's, and then Ford came out with a bigger one with five bearing crankshaft, and suddenly it was 1588, and it had a twin cam engine head on the top because Colin Chapman put it there, or Colin Chapman and his consultants put it there. And it all led, you know, in such a short order, you know, 7 or 8 years to the Ford DFV, the Formula One engine at 150 Grand Prix.
And that was, so I went to drive a Lotus Electra. I went up to Norfolk last week and had a tour of Team Classic Lotus, which I've never had before. Oh, mega. Well, I mean, just, you drive past it on the way to the Lotus factory, and I've seen it there, but I had no idea how much stuff was in there. And they were telling me the DFV was effectively part of Ford's communications/PR budget,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Is that right?
Yeah.
Somebody said, we're going to do this engine, and somebody at Ford, you'll have to remind me of the name because I can't remember who it was. And they said, and he said, look, I'll just put it as part of my budget. You just design that engine.
$300,000, I think.
That's
was
right.
The money.
Yeah.
And it was a deal between the PR chief of the time, who had been something like editor of the Daily Express or something like that.
Yeah.
And he got to know Henry Ford too, and the arrival of the DFV was cooked up between those people. And his name escapes me, and it's going to come to me very soon.
It'll come to us in a minute, mate. As we're talking, I just tried looking it up, and I can't look it up quickly. But I know it, and I know the name.
Even chatting to his son.
But anyway,
the other day.
What a bargain, effectively.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? 150 Grand Prix wins.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Ford was into... Ford has raced a lot, hasn't it? You know,
yeah.
But, you know, that gets it a prominent place at the top seat of Formula One for a long time.
Well, I also was lucky enough to have a chat to Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, and we were talking briefly about the Red Bull... Ford power unit deal, Formula One, that's coming. And he was saying it takes us back to the DFV era. There's a glorious simplicity about cooperating in the production of a Formula One engine.
Oh, really?
You know, you don't... it's not like racing a car, but it is a... It's an awesome demonstration of technology.
Yeah.
Walter Hayes. Walter Hayes was an absolute dynamo, absolute human dynamo.
Yeah.
I think it was just his force of personality that drove all this. And of course, there were the little rally cars coming along, but the relationship with Lotus was a big deal, because Lotus Cortina, then Escort Twin Cams, and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. There are some very cool Lotus.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a replica of the Mark One Lotus, which the Austin 7 special effectively, through to the Mark Four Mark is there, and then it starts
at Classic Team Lotus.
At Classic Team Lotus, yeah.
Oh, I'd love to
I
see
think
that.
Because it's owned by Clive Chapman, who is Colin's son, and then it is it looks after customer cars as well, but there is a collection of the family's own cars too, and then there's a workshop that it restores and maintains and race preps some stuff as well. So it's great to
there's a bloke called
around.
Bob Dance, who was Jimmy Clark's mechanic, who's still
there, I believe.
Gets out of spanners.
Yeah, which is just
amazing.
I mean, if you bought one of his old cars and it was still spannered by them. But also every lap that a Lotus Formula One car has ever done on a circuit, there is a record in that building of the lap time and the settings that car was on.
Wow.
So if you have one of Jim Clark's old racing cars and you go to a circuit for a classic Grand Prix and you think, okay, well, what settings should I put it on? There is a record of the spring and damper and Camera, caster, and all those settings that Jim Clark would have raced on. And you can go, well, let's try that for a basic session, shall we? Let's put it like that and see how I get on. And it will tell you how fast it went and everything else. And it's every single lap of every Lotus Formula One car is in there. It's a really serious archive as well. It's a great place to look around.
It's a sort of national treasure, by the sound of things. Gosh.
Yeah. And if it was the Ferrari Museum, I think somehow it would be much more widely known than it is. But you can go, listener. You can go to Classic Team Lotus, and I recommend you do.
I have been there, but not in a few years.
Yeah, I mean, I had a whistle stop tour, and I would like to go back and a longer one. The Mini Countryman. You've had a bit of time in one, haven't you?
Yeah. The steering committee thought she might like one. We've got a Cooper S at the moment, 69 plate, and she's been looking at them and just wondering whether a slightly bigger car, carry more junk in the back, might be useful. Likes the Mini Ethos. So we charmed this one out of Stormy, better known as Matt Saunders, our road test editor.
Yeah.
And did a few days in it, and it was interesting. It was a nice car, supple, you know, well, beautifully made as they are, well equipped, comfortable. But she couldn't get on with two things. The dinner plate dashboard is just overdone. It's a step too far now.
Oh, really? That's the central speedo, is it?
Yeah.
So it's still got a centralised.
Yeah.
But then do you get a little readout in front of you in the?
Yes, you get it on in that car. You get it on a head-up display, which is a nice, very good head-up display indeed. But there were two things that seemed weird to us. One was a dinner plate, you know, because just not used. It could be done better, I think. It's nice. They've done okay, but the other thing is this extraordinary. You sit in the car and there's this thing around you, which is like the fourth bridge. The windscreen pillars and the top rail and the dashboard make this sort of lump of structure the size of a 7 Series.
Really?
And it just seems to have been pinched from a car that's three sizes bigger. and the roof domes up over your head in a rather needless way. And I just found it odd.
I've just had a look at the picture of the interior. Oh, I see what you mean about the. Blimey. Yeah, okay.
It seems to have been pinched from a 5 Series or a 7 Series,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
And, because, as we know, these bits and pieces are all. They're all mixed up and chucked in the air and see where they come down and
play. Yeah.
But it was a good car, but odd.
Yeah.
And there are some other oddnesses about it. There's one of those strange patches, like on a Land Rover Defender, on the side of the car that's supposed to give it an identity, you know. That.
Yes, I did notice that. Is it supposed to just sort of break up the blockiness of the design?
Yeah, but if you look at a picture of the profile and put your finger over the actual block,
yeah,
it could be a Daihatsu.
Oh, you know, really?
The car's, in a way, lost its identity, because even the grille isn't very Mini-ish anymore.
No, it is funny. It's a big car, isn't it now? It's a lot. I mean, I know... That's okay, you know, and that's, if that's what people want. I know it's called Mini, but it's got to be a practical family car for a lot of people, hasn't it? But I see what you mean. Sorry, I'm just doing this. Listen, I know this is not great podcast etiquette to be looking at the internet and putting a thumb over a... Oh, yeah, it's got that. Yes.
Well, it is. It could be a Toyota or anything you like, couldn't it?
Yeah,
it could.
There's nothing demonstrably Mini about.
So I would like that. Mini.
Mm.
Here's my request.
Yep.
For them to draw a line under the styling that they've created for that car and do it again.
How quickly would you like that done, Steve?
End of the week, you know.
How hard can it be? Right, Stephen and I are going to take a very short break, and we'll be back with some more My Week in Cars in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to My Week in Cars. You can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com. And Chris Cuff has done that to say, Dear Matt, I live in the southwest of Cornwall, with lots of narrow roads and stone hedges camouflaged by greenery. I use a 56-plate Fiat Panda to see the family down the narrow lanes, transport grandchildren and dogs, take stuff to the tip and then to the beach. It does 45 to the gallon all day long and is the ideal size. It also means that the dogs and grandchildren don't travel in my Alfa Giulia to avoid scratching the leather and the filling it with beach sand. I find the Panda is enough car, really.
And I think
thanks
he's
for
right.
your kind words about the mag and this pod, Chris. Yeah, I think he's right, isn't he? Panda's great.
Oh, it's great. You could live your life with a Panda and nothing else, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I don't know whether I would choose to, but I love those cars. I think they're terrific.
Mm.
I just hope the next one that's coming will be as simple and, you know, sort of to the point as those cars have been.
Is it imminent?
I think there's a... Now, hang on. Trying to remember. There's... yes, I think there's something coming, isn't there? But I'm not sure... Oh, God, we should have looked this up.
I should have done it, because I didn't tell you this. But there's a letter about a Panda.
You know how there's echoes in the back of your head. I think it's going to go on for a couple of years yet.
Yeah.
The existing car. But it has been Italy's best-selling car, I believe. But I think it's gone over the top, and it's probably time for a replacement.
Yeah,
it's remember been there's all this fuss about the different platform that, you know, Pandas and 500s are related.
Mm-hmm.
The platform that's used for the new 500, the electric one, is going to produce a Panda, I believe.
Right. Yes, there's a 25th of February, Fiat has previewed the new electric Panda as one of five radically styled concepts that look ahead to a range of new affordable cars due on sale worldwide by the end of the decade. Oh yes, they released all these concepts on the eve of the Geneva Motor Show, didn't they? But not at the Geneva Motor Show. Yeah. But that new 500 platform is going to have
an engine. Yeah.
So it could be that the Panda will also do both.
It could. You could imagine that, couldn't you? I suppose we really have to see, or they have to see, how EVs go over the next year or two. Because I think the proposal for the petrol engine in the bigger 500 is still a couple of your 18 months or something from popping. Nothing stays the same, does it?
No. And it's got to work for them, hasn't it? Because the Pandas and 500s are the Fiats people buy.
Yeah.
They are what they sell.
It was interesting talking to Jim Farley about the Ford bloke about 2035, because we were talking Mustangs inevitably. And he was saying, I said, well, you know, it's all very well to be so bullish about the future of the Mustang forever and all that, but you're going to have to... What about 2035? You're going to have to stop making it then. Hmm. And he kind of leant forward and looked the old gimlet stare and said, you sure of that?
Interesting.
And, you know, when you've got somebody like that who's no longer certain, it's all bets are off, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting.
Yes, there was a... we did, because our last week's pod was a special on with Matthew Becker from JLR. We didn't talk about our respective columns much last week, did they? Did we?
No.
And I riffed a bit on the SMMT calling for a halving of VAT on new EVs. And you think, well, hang on a minute, because my LinkedIn feed is full of invested people telling me there's no problem with supply and demand, but the SMMT clearly thinks there is.
Yeah.
It's not as plain sailing as we are led to believe.
No.
Yeah, some people will have you think it is.
No, and all these undertones about, you know, people modifying how long their ICE cars are going to last, and you know, talking up hybrids in a way that hadn't before. It's a really funny time. I'm just glad not to be in the prediction business.
Yes, same. Yes, I'm happy to be talking about it rather than having to base my entire business model on getting it right.
It just means that the The thing you can be sure of is that the cars you'll be driving around in this time next year are not predictable.
Indeed, and there are going to be some absolute bargains one way or another.
Yeah.
I would drive around in, this is my column, I would drive, and it's related to Chris's letter, in fact, I would drive around in something not that big.
Oh,
I think you've come over and seen two cars outside my house this morning, which are a Renault Clio and a Suzuki Swift, the new Suzuki Swift. All new, all is doing some heavy lifting because it's a modified version platform from the last one, but it's an all new. It's not a facelift, it's a new car.
Yeah.
And it's very good. Like, really good.
They both look sweet, don't
they? They're really good. I mean, it helps that they're in good colours in the way that they look, but the Clio is just, it's, so that one is the pretty basic 0.9 TCE with a manual gearbox that our chief sub, Chris Culmer, borrowed the other day for his long-term report. He's swapped it. He's running a more expensive one. What car are running? This one. So yeah. He swapped it over. But I wanted to borrow that one to test it against the Swift. It's just great. It's really... the joy of a small car... I've spent quite a lot of time in big cars of late.
Of course.
And I got in that car, and the idea that I can... squeeze through gaps that might otherwise be denied me. I can park it in a matter of milliseconds rather than seconds. It's done. I mean, they both do 50 plus miles to the gallon. So you fill it up, that takes 2 minutes, and it'll do 400 miles.
Yeah.
And you just, and I think, hang on a minute, this is better. This isn't just enough car. This is better than stuff that costs 3-4 times as much and is 5 metres long and 2.1 metres wide.
So if justice were served, you'd actually pay...
You would pay more
for this advantage, wouldn't you?
Yeah, because when I started in this business, I don't want to sound like an old duffer, because it is a risk of this.
There's enough of
this,
us around.
Because, if saying this sort of thing is there is a chance, isn't there? But the law of diminishing returns, right? If you had a £15,000 car... A 30 grand one was quite a lot better than it.
Yeah.
60 grand one was a bit better again.
Yeah.
200 grand was a bit better again. But, you know, the scale of improvement was tapering off. But the short of it was an expensive car was better than a cheap one.
Yeah.
I don't know if that uniformly holds true as much as it used to. I still believe in it mostly. You know, a Bentley is superior to a Fiesta, but if you lined up a Bentayga outside my, there was a Bentayga and a Fiesta outside my house every day for a year, I'd spend quite a lot of time in a Fiesta.
Absolutely,
I'd spend most of my time, I think.
Yep.
And I just, there's something to be.
Oh, I think it's a powerful point. It's a really powerful point, and that you sort of slightly wonder the people who cook up marketing programs and marketing campaigns. This must occur to them, you know, it would cause you to quake a little bit, I think, because, you know, your whole business model is based on getting more money from people for more tin, more size, more stuff.
Well, I mean, the most profitable cars are usually the most expensive ones in a range. You know, the amount of money per car that Land Rover makes off of SV models. Isn't that right? That's, you know, it's... It's a lot compared to the rest.
It is a lot.
And
along comes Pryor and says, have your 18 grand for...
Yeah, try an 18 grand Clio.
Because it's so lovely.
Because it's better, yeah.
Oh, the other point you made, am I right, is that this, you know, we used to think poverty models had no equipment, but this thing does everything.
Oh, yeah, so the only option, I think, on that Clio is orange paint, which is a bit much, but, you know, it looks good on it. It's got alloy wheels, it's got electric windows, it's got full climate control, not just aircon. It's got its own sat-nav, but it still mates to your phone, which will do the sat-nav better.
Yeah.
It's got a stereo... Okay, it would be nicer if the audio had a higher quality output, and it would be a bit nicer if the car, in general, matched some of the refinement noise levels of a more expensive car. But I can't do anything else when I'm driving... other than want to know where I'm going, be the right temperature, and have some audio and fit through the gaps.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't have changeable ambient lighting
or
massage seats, but I don't, it's all right, I don't want them anyway.
Do you know the this is just another demonstration of how lucky we are in our racket, because you just get the chance to make these judgments, don't you? You know, because you have driven a 5.1 meter Lotus last week, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, in Bentayga the week before, whatever it was. And so when you get in this car, you can say with certainty that it's excellent.
Yeah. I just enjoyed it more. And also, it was the youngest, well, it is the youngest 21st this week, so we went out for dinner last night. A few of them climbed into the car. Three grown adults in the back of that car. I mean, shortish journey, but still, yeah, comfortably. And stuff in the boot, you know. I'm just sold on this.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it stays.
Yeah, I shan't be.
Sorry, lost the keys.
No, I can't. Yeah, you sure you want to swap back yet? So, but anyway, I like small. That's the short of it. Is the small car. I think there's a real. There's something just.
Especially when executed in the way the Suzuki do things in a Suzuki way, don't they? Which is enjoyable, and I think, you know, I continue to think that Renault are on a really lovely design wave, aren't they? That looks lovely.
It's a good looking car. Yeah, and also, what I'm talking about, it rides, handles, steers very pleasantly, really pleasantly. You know,
was it like with everyone in it? Did it still ride and handle okay?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it gets a little bit... Because you're adding quite a large percentage to its curb weight with five people in there. But it was fine. It was all right. I don't think they'd have wanted to go to the south of France in the back of it.
No.
But,
you didn't do the 1G corners.
No, exactly. But from the curry house to their flat, it was fine. Yeah, it was all right. So.
Sounds great.
What else should we talk about? Oh, yeah, part two of... my column this week, I suppose. It's sort of not entirely unrelated. And we talked about it a bit with Matt Becker last week, is subscription features on subscription.
I just love
subscription.
I love the way you get a bit out of shape over this, you know. Prior, ladies and gentlemen, is never he's the most level man in the world, but he gets a bit exercised about subscription gadgets in cars.
We talked a bit last week about over-air updates, and I want to be clear, I don't mind those. Over-the-air updates in a car, I think, are okay. If they've improved some functionality, or they think, especially in an EV, actually the latest software will get more out of the way this works, you know, you can just, or actually some customer feedback has said that it would be nicer if we put a button for X on the home screen and made it larger. Very happy with over-air updates to do that sort of thing. Where I have a beef is... And actually, for manufacturers, that adds another layer of complexity. They never used to have to worry about, really. Because they might make changes to a vehicle's makeup during its life cycle, but they wouldn't necessarily have to go and retrofit it to all of the cars they'd already sold.
Yeah.
But anyway, where I do have a beef, and I don't think I'm alone, a manufacturer putting in a piece of hardware into your car and then charging you a monthly, yearly fee for using it. Manufacturers seem to be backing away from it because I don't think customers...
Well, it's because you've done so much bleating about it.
Well, maybe it's just me. Yeah, but I don't think it's just me. any look at any internet forum around this issue,
it's not just me.
Because the idea that they've built it, you've made it, there you go, there's £50,000 for this car. It's got heated steering wheel elements. And then they say, yeah, but to turn them on, we want £30 a year. Yeah. Just like, wait a minute. Because if I've paid for it and it's not mine, then stealing it isn't theft. That was a thing somebody said about software. If you buy or streaming services or whatever, if you pay for it but you still don't own it, then piracy isn't theft. And I've thought, oh, that's quite a powerful argument. Because if you pay to download something, that's yours now. That's it. You've done it. That's yours. So... Anyway, the idea that if it's in my car but I don't own it and I have to pay a certain amount to turn it on, my thought is that, okay, well, come and take it out. Because if I'm paying to carry around heated seat elements, that's costing me fuel to carry around heated seat elements. Apparently these heat elements aren't mine. So either come and take them out.
Yeah, this isn't my car.
Or pay me to carry them around. Because there will be a fuel consumption... deficit for me having to.
I like this. The rental idea. Yeah. I like the, you know, you send an invoice to Audi or someone saying,
yeah. Here is, yes, yeah, we would like £30 a year to turn on heated seats. Okay, here's £40 for the season that I'm not using them, where apparently I don't own it. That's my thought on that one, basically.
It's going to be interesting to see how that one runs, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, I just don't know whether...
I don't know, I wouldn't sort of bank on retiring on the proceeds.
No, nor would I, really. But I just, if next time a manufacturer tells me that they are planning subscription services for hardware, that would be my response, I think. And I don't get irate about much, but sometimes things seem,
they do get under your skin.
They do get under my skin, and a bit, and I don't,
and this one's definitely stayed there.
It's got there. But anyway, thankfully manufacturers do seem to be shying away from it a bit.
I would say
that pretty much brings us to the end of this week's My Weekend Cars. Bista Scramble coming up Sunday.
Hooray.
What are you driving over in, mate? Anything
I think I'll particular? Take the Alpine, the A110. It needs a bit of a trot. The missus is keen on the idea.
You'll talk about this probably more next week, but you're just back from a track day, innit?
Yeah, there was a Guild of Muttering Rotters, the sort of hacks union, have an annual track day at... usually at Castle Combe. Anyway, I've just been to Castle Combe, beat the place up, 2 hours on the track. Think I can drive a bit now. And my son demonstrated the other thing, because he was a lot quicker than me. But we had a good time.
Hmm. And the cars come away from that much track time with no...
Fine. Yeah, I was a bit apprehensive, but the tyres are okay, the brakes are okay. So.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing that and you on Sunday. They're going to hand over a bit of a circuit map to you on Sunday with Cropley Curve, are they? Is that right?
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I'm still recovering from that. It's extraordinary. But
yes, Bicester Heritage, if you weren't listening the other week, has renamed its circuit. Renamed corners on its circuit. One of those is Cropley Curve, which is
unbelievable. I'm keen to drive around it in the Audi, in the Alpine.
On the Alpine, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know what'll happen, I'll remain amazed.
Yeah. So Steve and I will be back this time next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Cheerio.
See you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.